Let's talk about switches, or rather circuits. I'm going to go fast, but translation is not the point in communication, so just watch the images, follow the diagrams, you'll get it. In 1943, inspired by the cybernetic idea born out of anti-aircraft defense that machines and minds might be thought together through the language of logic and mathematics, the psychiatrist Warren McCullough and the logician Walter Pitts decided to take quite literally the machine-like nature of human beings. They came up with neural nets. In this article, they introduced the idea that neurons operate on an all-or-nothing principle when firing electrical impulses over synaptic separations. This all-or-nothing threshold likens them to logic gates, therefore nets could be modeled as Turing machines. This model was based on two interesting characteristics, a semiotic feature and a temporal one. The first interesting fact about nets is that every neuron firing, according to McCullough and Pitts, had a semiotic character. It was mathematically rendered as a proposition. It affirms or denies a fact of activation, and therefore neurons can be thought of as signs. True, false, one, two. And nets as semiotic situations or communication structures like the mathematical theory of communication. The second element was a temporal structure that assumes the fundamental psychosis of both machines and minds, an imminent inability to differentiate interiority or exteriority, inside and outside, that results from the temporal nature of the net. Neuronal nets are determinate in terms of the future, they are predictive, but indeterminate in terms of the past, which is to say, given a net in a particular time state, you can predict the future action of the net, T plus one, but not the past action. This makes them definitive and analogous to Markov chains and algorithms. Most importantly, you cannot know from within the net which neuron had fired to excite the current situation. McCullough offered the model of a circular memory neuron activating itself with its own electrical impulses. See there. At every moment, what you experience as memory is not the recollection of the original activation of the neuron, but merely that it was activated in the past at an indeterminate time. Within neural nets, at any moment, you cannot know which neuron you received the message from, or whether it was a misfire. In short, you cannot know whether a stimulus comes from within or without the net, whether it was a fresh input or simply a recycled memory. More importantly, who cares? It doesn't matter. All networks, including minds, are therefore psychotic, incapable of placing themselves in time and space. If this is true, that we are rationally and logically psychotic. And this is not a theory. I'm not quoting Deleuze, it's just a proof. Inside networks, all logics are psychotic. What we thought we were doing, said McCullough, and I think we succeeded fairly well, was treating the brain as a Turing machine. That is, as a device which could perform the kind of functions which a brain must perform if it was only to go wrong and have a psychosis. Yay. According to the medical definitions McCullough was playfully citing, to be schizophrenic is not to be reasonable, but it is to be logical. Accepting that there are many things that could not be known or computed, he inverted the questions that Turing had initially posed and chose to ask instead, what if mental functioning could now be demonstrated to emanate from the physiological actions of multitudes of logic gates? What could be built, not what could be proven? He explained, for example, that whether one feels hot or cold was not a question of what the temperature of the external stimuli factually was, but rather what route the signal took to arrive, the structure of the circuit. There is no inside, no subject-environment separation, just ecologies of agents. McCullough spoke of sensation and perception as an illusion, but what McCullough really implied was that the true illusion was none other than that of the subject as an entity separate from the external perceptual field, the illusion of consciousness and analytic command over the world. For neural net researchers, the question then turned to determining not whether minds were the same or different as machines, but rather what difference does it make to be in one network or another, the performative, not ontological question. Thought becomes a process embodied in actual structures. Such a machine, therefore, does not operate top-down, but rather in feedback loops between its storage, its processing segments, and the interface for input and output. The control or the reading head in a Turing machine is directed by the tape it is reading from memory, not reverse. It is psychotic, and indeed, today's machines have trouble differentiating between inputs and programs. The two are the same. Top down, bottom up, which way does control go? I can't emphasize this enough. Control in computing is an uncanny subject. It is uncertain. It is not what decides the order of operations, but rather it is told what to do by memory and feedback loops by the programs or inputs it reads. Machines and minds now work in psychotic but preemptive future perfect loops. And these wily circuits, they continue to travel. Uncertainty is a device for technology into our machines, supply chains, homes, habitats in urban spaces, organizations. Urban space, for example, could be conceived as a nervous channel that could always be improved and enhanced, made more imageable and more conducive to circulating sensorial information. Older assumptions about structure or the social transformed into notions of interacting agents. And buildings, too, began to change as environment is replaced by climate. If at once we used to think of the building as sealing off the individuals inside from the environment, managing the workers or securitizing them, now, without clear separations between inside and outside, self and environment, buildings, cities, and systems became climates that could be, modulate and network individuals through and in infrastructural or maybe planetary scales by way of circuits that run from our minds to our cities, all to be controlled through nervously networked systems that turn energy into information. Mandating, of course, however, air conditioning. Of course, therefore mandating a switch to fossil fuel in order to fuel the new climate control and modulations for our new network cells and our buildings and our habitats and organizations, just as nervous nets turn electrical signals into communication messages. But it was particularly in the realm of economy and finance, as exemplified by the works of individuals like Herbert Simon, that these forms of measurement, parading under the label of rationality, took hold. And here is Herb Simon with his rational equations and Newell with their psychotic games. They, while working at RAND, the Air Force-sponsored think tank, Simon, then thinking about administrative behavior, came upon an idea. Under the influence of von Neumann's games in computers, Wiener's cybernetics, and McCullough's neural nets, he thought rationality had to be redefined, even in game theory. He later explained his theory as emerging from the, and I quote, acute schizophrenia suffered by the social sciences that dually posited an omniscient rational actor with full information, or an affective and stupid beast guided only by Oedipal complexes and pleasure principles. Instead, he imagined a new subject capable of cognitive capacity for making systematic and apparently optimizing decisions according to preset rules without having to represent all the information in a market. Uncertainty again. Simon imagined a subject incapable of objectivity. We must, he wrote, be prepared to accept the possibility that what we call the environment may lie in part within the skin of the biological organism. Later, reminiscing about his life in artificial intelligence, Herb Simon elaborated on this vision of an agent by recourse to the figure of an ant. The ant, he argued, is only as intelligent as its environment. It is coupled with the exterior world intimately. Its choices decided as much by the outside of the internal workings of the internal workings of the nervous system. The ant, and he quote, deals with each obstacle as he comes to it. He probes for ways around or over it without much thought for future obstacles. For Simon, revising the agent in this way refocuses the search for cognitive intelligence on the production of situations and patterns and ecologies for actions, rather than on the effort to understand language or consciousness, no representation, no figure-ground relation. Perception and cognition become sensing and smartness as the act of probing and the act of decision-making are made equivalent, and the idea of intelligence can be linked to small idiotic decisions rather than the comprehension of concepts or the ability to represent the future. So agency becomes an agent, environment becomes ecology, all of this in the interest of bounding rationality and measuring uncertainty. If we assume logic is psychotic, then we don't need to know everything. We can shift to the behavioral, the operational question. What could we measure? What can we do? What these models measured is not what is happening, but what will happen as a result of finding patterns in past data. It is the circuit, the net, the structure of the game or the organization that matters. Processes are materialized, made visible, and become both the object of and tool of new forms of economy and governmentality. And these concepts appear to find fruition in the later development of option markets and the Black-Scholes equations in the 60s and 70s, to which Simon is often thought to be a kind of progenitor. If this is so, then our markets, managers, and organizations are amnesic, psychotic, preemptive, behavioral, affective, uncertain, rational, but certainly never reasonable. These circuits networking our minds to our governments possess uncanny and wily capacities and qualities. They're preemptive, but not predictive. Control isn't about knowing the future, it's about acting, being an algorithmic act. There is no representation. If this is true, then the new epistemology of the net, neural, economic, behavioral, territorial, became an epistemology of feedback and self-organization. What had once been hierarchical, worker ants, queens, warriors, became a world of homogeneous flatness, amplified by the latest in labor ads from New York City subways. And data would drive an emerging system that could evade politics to the eternal deferral of endpoints in the name of ongoing small little dumb things that produce really smart networks without ever really knowing where they came from and where they're going. Top down, bottom up, which way does control go? This uncertainty makes computing scalable, makes volatility and uncertainty a technology, as embodied in derivative and futures markets that never need to know the truth or possess full information, but make behavioral moves grounded in limiting time and assuming securities act like ants. And one of the most volatile and heavily derived and financialized markets today is energy, and particularly oil. We can bet on that dangerous future because we have made ignorance and knowledge the infrastructure for speculation. So now, as we sit in our homes, coddled by our machines, linked to networks from our nervous systems to our built environments, trading and deriving at hyper speeds, all driven by air conditioning and big data. But wait, we've had so many switches so recently, how do we know if we're not jammed? Maybe we're just recycling detritus, like misfiring memory neurons. Maybe I'm just making this up. Maybe I'm psychotic. Systems get jammed, hacked, choked, even. Sometimes history can reemerge as a surprise. We need to remember that control is an uncanny thing. Up and down, which way? We remember that switches didn't happen so long ago. And if our systems are amnesic, then it becomes incumbent to perform new forms of time or memory beyond, intensified with, differentiated from, those of derivation. Control is not certainty, and uncertainty can be a tactic for different forms of change. Our machines have taught us we are not the masters of the earth. They have transformed our climate. In fact, perhaps climate change is the infrastructure for computing. I would say so. But machines have also made us ever more interrelated and proximate, intimate to many beings, materialities, forms of life. This leaves me with some critical final questions. How are we to encounter, then, difference, complexity, and chance in an age where chance itself, the changes in the system, are the very site of automation? We must produce a politics and criticality, a research creation practice, perhaps, of chance and complexity. How does the productive space between history and preemption get activated to produce different forms of futures, not those of the automated derivative, but other forms of life? This brings me back to history and Switch 1948. Thank you.